and welcome to Vista Talks, interesting discussions with interesting people from all around the world. I'm your host for today, Maria Roa, and I am delighted to be joined by Mimi Moore. Welcome, Mimi.
Thank you.
Mimi Moore is a digital and content marketing manager with over 25 years of experience in the localization industry as a project manager, account manager, and content marketer. She collaborates with globalization teams, language service providers, and global B2B enterprises software companies to create content and support their marketing efforts. Mimi is program manager content for Women in Localization and owns Netherlands-based Wolfson House Writing, which helps companies grow their business with digital marketing and content strategy services. Mimi, I feel there is a thousand things we need to talk about, so it is a pleasure to have you here with us. Let's keep going.
Yes, I'm really glad to be here.
As I have mentioned before, you're an expert on content strategy. So what are some of the key elements of a successful content strategy?
Well, I could definitely use up our whole time just talking about this topic, so I'll try to hit upon the highlights. So I think of content as a flywheel. It's something that's continually operating. So if you think about it, like, you need a pipeline of content. So you have something coming in today, something coming in tomorrow, and something coming in a month. So that way you're constantly working on and having new content. Without a strategy, all of this is like having a house without a good foundation. It's a series of exercises, but it doesn't necessarily lead you anywhere. So when you work on your strategy, you want to include things like clear objectives. What do you want to achieve? Is it about brand awareness? Do you need more leads? Do you want more engagement? Is it about making sales? So make sure you focus on your objectives as you're making your strategy. One thing to remember, though, is your strategy is always evolving. So you want to be sure to always be talking with your stakeholders, your audience, and tweak it as needed, and also account for the unexpected things that may come up, which always happens with content as well. You should also look at who is your target audience and define their needs, think about their pain points, and how they consume content. So don't try to be everything to everyone. Don't try to have too many audiences. Try and focus on specific audiences, because it's better to target a few and do things well versus trying to be everything to everybody, which usually doesn't work. Another early step in your strategy is to think about doing a content audit. So what content do you have today? Are there any gaps? Is anything redundant? Is there things you can be doing better? This helps you to see where you're starting and where you need to go with your content. Content types are important. So what kind of content does your audience prefer to consume? Everybody learns differently, so a variety is important. So decide what kind of content to create and try and create a variety. So things like infographics, podcasts, videos, webinars, ebooks. Think beyond just a blog, you know, and be really creative with different formats. A content calendar is super important to have a schedule for the content creation, publication, and distribution. And this really is what makes your flywheel work. The structure from the calendar helps support your consistency and your planning. But like I said, it needs to be a bit flexible for the unexpected things that come up, because they always seem to. Also work into your calendar a plan for reusing your content and for derivative content. So for example, creating blogs from an ebook, or repurposing content that you think is evergreen and can be reused without being repetitive. Reusing content prevents you from creating everything from scratch. And so this helps you to maximize the value of your content. So you're creating something once, using it multiple times in multiple different ways, which then it's more cost effective and time effective to manage your content this way. When you get to the content, who will be creating your content? Will it be in-house teams? Will it be freelancers? Will you be working with an agency? If you outsource, be sure you give them clear guidelines on voice, style, brand that they can follow. And also, really importantly, as a content marketer, is to give them a detailed brief. What do you want from them? What do you want things to say? What angle should they take in their writing? What keyword should be in it? What should the meta copy say? So there's a lot of elements that needs to go into your brief. And the better your brief, the better piece you'll get back from your writer and the less rewriting or editing that you may need to do. Because if you have to rework it or edit it, it can cause you delays and you may end up paying more for it. Another thing to consider is how are you going to distribute your content? Website, social, email, paid advertising, there's a lot of different options. So you have to see what works best for your audience. Once you start putting your content out there, you need to find a way to measure it. How's it performing? So you can track things like downloads or engagement or web traffic or conversion rates. If something's not performing, you should analyze whether it's the content, is it the distribution, is it something else? And marketing is all about trying different things. So if something's not working, don't be afraid to experiment until you find something that works. And that's also why measuring and metrics are really important. Budget is always key. How much can you invest with your content creation process and your distribution tools and advertising? So if you have a super big budget, that opens up the door of possibilities. If you have a small budget, then you may have to be scrappy and creative. Underlying all this, you need good processes. So you need processes for creating, to get approvals, to publish the content. You need to be clear about who's doing what. So the responsibilities for everybody who's involved in the process. It's good to make those very clear. And then once you get to this point, you also need to think about maintenance. Once you put content out there, how often are you updating it? Is it still relevant? Is it still keeping up with current trends? And so it's not like once you just publish, it's out there and you're done. It's a wheel. You could keep it moving. So these are, I've covered a lot, but these I think are the basics in order to have a really thorough content strategy and make everything work efficiently.
My God, I think we started strong. I knew the question was complex, but that answer, I mean, we covered absolutely everything. I mean, we need to know who we mentioned, like objectives. I mean, who is our target audience? We talk about content types, content calendar. I mean, let me look at my notes because we talk about measuring metrics, budget. I mean, we talk about briefings. Oh my goodness. I think we talk about everything, but there was something that it was common into everything that you were always talking about analytics somehow. Everything needs to be measured. We need to check which are the content types that our audience likes better. When reusing content, we also need to check which were the contents that our audience that work better with our audience before, because otherwise, I mean, like, there is no use in reusing, sorry about the double, in reusing that content.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, like, all these things, when looking for the objectives, also we need to know that and to have an understanding of what is it that we are looking for. But somehow we need to have clear which are the analytics that we're going to use to measure that with our content. So there is always some kind of like analytics behind everything that we're going to do and how we're going to measure. That's going to be interesting because, I mean, I know I was going to ask you this farther on, but now that we're talking about this, how do you measure the success of a content marketing campaign? Because that's tough.
Yeah. And that's why I gave a lot of examples like downloads or engagement or web traffic or conversion, because some of these are easier to measure, like web traffic. You can see if you put a piece of content out and suddenly your web traffic spikes, well, then, you know, to a certain page, well, then maybe that content is performing well, or it's easy to see in certain CMS tools, like if you're using HubSpot, you can see who is downloading the content, how many downloads you've had, how, or if they're going to a web page, how much time are they spending on a web page? So you can get that, those kinds of analytics fairly easy. And it tells you, again, what's working and what's not. But some things are harder to figure out, like conversion, or how do you tie a piece of content to actual making sales, you know? So there's, you know, in an ideal world, that content download is tied to figures in Salesforce. And then, so if somebody downloads that content, they, it has a tracker on it, and you can see, okay, yep, that's that person. They downloaded this. Now they're in Salesforce. And you can tie it more directly. But honestly, a lot of the people I've worked with are not that sophisticated yet, you know, because that takes a big budget. So,
and at the same time, that person might already be a prospect or a client. They did download the ebook, maybe, or the piece of content, whatever they might have downloaded. Maybe we never interacted with them before. They were just a prospect or something. And they did download the ebook, and that stuck in their head. They knew the brand. They thought it was cool. And maybe later on, I don't know, you met them at an event again, and they think like, oh, this was the people that I saw this piece of content. It was really cool. I'm going to go visit them again. Let's see what they have to say. So maybe all that help, you know, sometimes you have to strike a client or a prospect many times, and that piece of content did help a lot, but you cannot tie it up to be the final reason why they did, but it did help. Exactly. Like, you don't know how much. 30%, 40%, 50%.
Right. And there's statistics out there that people need to see a piece of content or hear your name a certain number of times. I think it's something like 7 times before it starts to even sink in that they're hearing your messages. So that's why you hear, like on a TV commercial, they're saying the company name over and over and over again. It's because that's how it sinks into your consciousness and you become aware of it. So repetition.
They like to know that you know what you're talking about, that that you're an expert in the matter, that they know who you're there, that they know that the person that they're working with, they know how to do their job. And that's why these pieces of content are so important.
Right.
But the measure, to measure that at the end, it is hard.
It is hard. But without that, you don't know what's working either. So it's, you know, there are some statistics that are harder to get, some are easier. You just set your bar where you are able to measure it, and then see, start tracking. Yeah, you got to start someplace. So
yeah. Okay, let's move on. Sorry, I just get.
I love it. I love it.
I could just talk about it for so long. Sorry about that. Well, how do you ensure, because this is very important too, that your content is relevant and engaging to your target audience?
Yeah. You know, a big part of it goes back to what I mentioned about the strategies. You need to understand your audience. Who are you writing the content for? And a big piece of that is doing personas. So when you create your personas, you think about, what are these people's interests? What are their challenges? What kind of behaviors? Like, what kind of websites do they go to? Where do they get their information? Who do they see as an authority on this subject? And so the persona is going to help guide you as far as you're writing for this sort of profile, and you can tailor your content as you're writing it to fit that profile. Another way to get more information about the audience is to do things like do surveys or forms to get these sort of direct insights from your audience about what they like, what they don't like. And it could be something as simple as a survey on LinkedIn. So it doesn't have to be something really complicated, or a SurveyMonkey form that they can quickly fill out. Another way is to do things like social listening. So go on your online channels. What is your audience talking about when they engage with your posts? Or even what are they talking about with your competitors is another way to also help find out and get more information. So that's one way. Another way to make sure it's relevant is to stay on top of trends. And marketing is always changing. Mm-hmm. And so you need to constantly be upskilling and staying on top of trends. And there are tools out there that can help you. Things like Google Trends or BuzzSumo will help you to understand general trends. But for localization industry trends, it's best to keep an eye on what are the companies talking about? What are people talking about at trade shows? You know, what are the industry publications saying? And who are our industry thought leaders and what are they saying? And so that helps you also to see what kinds of trends are out there. But I think the most important thing about making sure your content is relevant is to solve problems for your audience, right? Because you need to be authentic. It needs to not be too salesy. It needs to address their pain points and their challenges that they care about. You need to offer solutions and maybe other resources to help them. So that's the biggest thing. People will keep coming back if you're solving their problem or you're giving them ideas. If it's too salesy, I don't think they will.
Yeah, I like all those ideas. I mean, like follow trends and events is something that I think we all do or we all try to do. That's why we keep on going to localization industry events all the time. So we are updated into the latest news. I just would like to know, what do we all have to do to be trendsetters? You know, I mean, like, what can we do to be the ones coming out with the latest content so they all follow us instead of us following them?
That's a good question. Tell me if you figure it out. So
okay, we. I mean, I'll be trying to do that. So what are some of the best practices for localizing content for different markets?
So I think one best practice, and this is something that if you're in the local industry a long time, it's always said, is to get involved as early as possible, as far upstream as possible with the people who are making content. So if you're a content creator, ask to work with your localization team. Get them into meetings as you start planning to make the content. Localization teams, try to make contact or make friends with these other stakeholders in your company so they're thinking about localization as they're creating content. So this way you guys can start working together to make sure things go smoothly when it does come to localization. For example, if the two teams aren't talking to each other, you know, the content creators go off and they make their content, then they're like, here you go, it's ready for localization. There could be all kinds of problems in the content that then the localization team has to go back and say, this is not going to work, or else they start localizing and the linguists have a bunch of questions, you know, and so it gets delayed and it costs more because it's problematic. So that collaboration, it works for everybody. It's one of the most important things, I think, of localizing content. Something else is I would suggest to standardize, you know, using simplified English. Make sure the terminology in your content matches across all of your content. Is it the same what you're using in your UI as in your content? In addition to keeping your TM clean, because it's all consistent, it's standardized, it can help you to reduce the volume of text you need to translate and then also save you money. So you can use your budget someplace else. So also to when you're creating that content, the content team should think about things like what's appropriate for each market. And they're the things we always think about as localizers, you know, colors, images, symbols. Is the content internationalized? So does it have the right time, date, formats, and currency and measurements? And then there's also things to take into account like SEO. SEO for every market is different. So you can't take your American SEO and think, well, we'll just translate it and that'll work in different countries, because it won't. So you need to do a lot of research to understand those things. And then also understand things like legal requirements, compliance, regulatory requirements for each market. So all of these things need to be researched to avoid any surprises. Lastly, I would say brand is really important, that you want to make sure your brand stays consistent across all of your markets. And the brand is not just the look and feel, but also the tone and voice. You want it to be the same. So again, it's a lot of things to take into account as you're starting to think about localizing content.
Yeah, I think it is the same thing with pictures, right? I mean, like, you need to make sure you're using the right people. If you're using people, the right people for the pictures that you're choosing for each country.
Right. And be careful with things like colors, you know, because colors have different meanings in different countries.
Yeah,
like reds and whites, they mean different things. So you need to take that into account too.
Yeah, words in Spanish do not mean the same in Spain that in Latin America.
Right. Yeah.
Well, not even in all parts of Latin America. Sorry for saying that. I mean, like, not even in Argentina or like Mexico, they mean the same. So,
yeah,
crazy.
Even in English, it's different. You know, the UK uses different words than the US. And so, you know, you think we all speak the same language, but it's kind of we do. Not
crazy.
100%.
Okay, and we almost came to the end. Let me do the last question to you. What are some of the emerging trends in content marketing that you think?
Yeah.
Here comes the trendsetters. What are some of the emerging trends in content marketing that you think will be important in the coming years?
This is an interesting question because it does go back to our trendsetter question. And I have a couple ideas that are maybe controversial. One is I think content should be ungated, which then causes a problem because people like it to be gated because then they have people filling out forms and then they can treat those people as leads. I don't believe that. I think just because someone fills out a form doesn't mean they're displaying a buying behavior or they're ready to talk to a salesperson yet. And it's super annoying to give your details and then the next day you get an email from their sales team saying, "Hey, I heard you downloaded this and we should talk. And are you ready for a demo?" And it's like, I'm just giving information. So I think it's better for gate to ungate and let people get your content, and it builds trust. You trust them to download it and you trust them to come back to you when they're ready on their schedule. If they have questions or they want more information, they will keep coming back. And tied into this is how people consume content. You know, we've always been taught that content is a funnel with an awareness, a consideration, and a conversion stage. Well, I don't necessarily believe that. I think it's not a funnel, but more like a spider web, where the way people consume content, they jump around. They don't necessarily go from this piece to this piece to that piece. They're getting this and reading part of it. Then they might want that or this. You know, they may download an ebook, but then they're like, "Oh, okay, this is great, but I want to look at the infographic. I want to look at the video. I want the white paper with more details," you know. So it's not a linear progression of how they consume content. So this is why I think things like content hubs are really a smart idea, because what you do is you put a website out there, you put several related pieces together, different kinds of pieces, and then you let people come and they can consume it in whatever order they want, in whatever format they want. And again, they'll come back to you when they're ready, because they understand that you never didn't ask them for anything. You're helping to educate them and provide them guidance. And that, I think, makes you a stronger candidate for when they're going to make a decision up to buy something. So those are my more controversial things that I think that's are available. I would also say AI, I think, is something that is also going to be is very interesting, because it's sort of like when MT came out and translators were feeling worried that they were going to be out of work. You know, now with ChatGPT and AI, writers and content marketers are worried they're going to be out of work because the AI can just write things. And I think that's not the case, because when you get an AI written article, it's so high level. If you want something like a blog, then maybe you can reuse part of it, but it still requires editing to make sure it's accurate, to make sure it is relevant to your audience. And especially in our industry with localization, ChatGPT is not going to know as much as a human writer does. So you can't necessarily trust everything that it it gives you. It's going to require editing. It's going to require that focus that a human can bring to talk about localization in a detailed way. So those are a few things to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I will listen to you. Maybe we write something on ungated content.
Oh, yeah, I would love that. I would love that.
Well, it was a pleasure talking to you. Is there anything else that you would like to share with our audience today?
Yeah, there's one other thing. Is a lot of what we've talked about has been B2B or B2C content marketing strategy. And so, but there's a lot of content that other content that's important, especially for globalization and localization teams. And I would say that internal communications is something that's really important, some content that's very important. Internal globalization teams often struggle with things like evangelization and education within their companies. So I think having someone on your team, maybe a part-time contractor or an employee who's from your internal comms team, to help you with those kinds of communications and education and evangelization is really important. They could help you do things like help you with presentations for senior management or key stakeholders, either educating them about localization or maybe about best practices or what your team might have accomplished. There's also things like creating trainings. So then maybe other teams know how to best work with the globalization and localization teams. Maybe an internal newsletter is a good thing to tell other teams what your team has been working on and talk about accomplishments. For example, you know, this is translated. We're now in this market. We're seeing sales go up because we translated this. You know, those kinds of things, I think, are really important to broadcast and to share internally so everybody knows what the localization team's doing, how to work better, and collaborate more effectively. You know, another thing that this person could do with internal comms is create like internal documentation, like internal wiki pages, you know, with processes or forms people can fill out when they have a request. You know, so there's a lot of content that internal teams need, in addition to thinking of content as sort of an external marketing kind of activity.
I'm actually very happy that you're saying this, because at Bizatech we do have this type of internal newsletters, and I think they work very well. In order to communicate with the rest of the company. At the end, we are lots of people. We all work in different areas, and it is a great way of communicating things that we all did together. I mean, we all put like our little something in order to make all these things happen. And it is also a way of letting them know, as you said, like, I don't know, like we got a logo for, I don't know, this, and it's a new logo that you can use and everyone can access it here. I mean, it's little things like that, or like we get a new PR and it's here, and I don't know, some new post in LinkedIn, you can all share it. Stuff like that. So it's from small things like that to everything. Yeah. But I want to let our audience know, if anyone needs more advice or if they want to contact you, can they do it through LinkedIn, or do you have an email or anything that you can share?
Yes, they can contact me through LinkedIn, or if they want to write to me at mimi@wolfsonhousewriting.com. They're welcome to do that too. Any thoughts or feedback, especially about ungated content or the spider web instead of the funnel, I would love to hear that. So
that's perfect. Mimi, it's been great to have you. I had so much fun and we talk about so many things. So really thank you for being here.
You're welcome. We could have been here for 2 hours, I think.
Actually, we could. Well, that's the end of today's show with Mimi Moore. Please make sure to tune in again to see and or to listen to the next Vista Talk show, where we will be discussing more interesting topics with interesting people from all around the world.